So let's talk a little bit about Pesach, which is, I think, a week from tonight. We'll be sitting
tomorrow.
A week from tonight by B'dikas Chametz. And tomorrow night, the Seder and Mirza Hashem. So some couple of Pesach concepts. So of course, Pesach is the birth of Klal Yisrael. It's called the Yom Hiladas. The Navi Yecheskel calls it Yetzias Mitzrayim, the Leida, the birth of Klal Yisrael. So although perhaps we didn't become fully responsible for mitzvahs until Matan Torah, which was 49 or 50 days later, 51 days later, but the beginning of as a nation is when we left Mitzrayim. Some compare Matan Torah, Yetzias Mitzrayim to birth, and Matan Torah to Bar Mitzvah, an escalated Bar Mitzvah. But that's when we became chayiv in the mitzvahs. Yetzias Mitzrayim, as we know, is mentioned throughout our davening constantly. Everything is zechel Yetzias Mitzrayim. The Chinuch talks about it being the yesoid, the foundation of everything. The foundation of everything. We remember Yetzias Mitzrayim. Hashem took us out of Mitzrayim. We were a slave nation and made us servants of Hashem, Avdei Hashem. We have a special mitzvah to remember Yetzias Mitzrayim every day, right? L'man tizkor es yom tzeischa mi'eretz Mitzrayim kol yimei chayecha every day. And in the Haggadah we talk about that the mitzvah is not only to remember Yetzias Mitzrayim by days, but also by night, right? So when we talk about remembering Yetzias Mitzrayim on a simple level, first and foremost, it means remembering the Exodus of Egypt. Remember that we were slaves and Hashem took us out of bondage. But, of course, it has many deeper meanings as well, where Yetzias Mitzrayim becomes something that is a constant theme and motif in our Avodas Hashem, and serving Hashem. It says, as we say in the Haggadah, B'chol yoyim v'yoyim, every single day, Chayiv Adam liris es atzmai, a person should see himself every day leaving Mitzrayim. And what does that mean, to leave every day Mitzrayim? And there's different explanations given. Let's touch on maybe two. One level is the word Mitzrayim, which is the name of a country called Egypt. The Hebrew word Mitzar means narrowness, constraint, right? Like we say Rosh Hashanah in the davening before we blow the shofar, Min ha-Mitzar karasi ka, we call it Hashem out of a narrow situation, narrow straits. Anani b'merchav, and Hashem answers, brings us to a state of expansiveness, of broadness. So what does it mean going out of that narrowness? And one of the explanations given is that the physical world is a place of limitation. Everything about this world is limited, is finite, versus godliness and spirituality and holiness is infinite. When it comes to mitzvahs, they say, Rechava mitzvascha me'oid, right? It says in Tehillim, the mitzvahs are connecting to something much greater. Kedusha is something much greater and much stronger than the world that we find ourselves in. And therefore, a Yid has the ability every day to go out of Mitzrayim, which means to leave their physical, finite, limited being and connect to the infinite. And that's why, where do we do the mitzvah of Zechiras Yetzias Mitzrayim every day? At what point of our davening do we fulfill the mitzvah of Zechiras Yetzias Mitzrayim? It's connected to Kriyas Shema, right? The third section of Kriyas Shema is where we say L'man Tizkor, is where we remember leaving Mitzrayim. Now, so we think of Kriyas Shema as a three-section part. But really, Kriyas Shema is two sections, right? The Shema and the Vahoyim Shemoah. The third one, Vayomer, is for Yetzias Mitzrayim. So why did Chazal put them together? Why is there a connection? Why? Well, the mitzvah of Kriyas Shema, and right after Kriyas Shema, back-to-back, the mitzvah of Yetzias Mitzrayim. Why is Yetzias Mitzrayim connected with Kriyas Shema? But if we understand Yetzias Mitzrayim on a deeper level, the Yetzias Mitzrayim is the ability to go out of ourselves, go out of our limitations, and connect to the limit, to the infinite Hashem. That is a direct continuation of Kriyas Shema. Because Kriyas Shema is Kabbalah Sol Malchus Shemayim. Kriyas Shema is the epicenter of davening. We accept Hashem's kingdom, the yoke of Hashem. We accept Avas Hashem and Yiras Hashem, all that is in Kriyas Shema. So immediately that brings us to Yetzias Mitzrayim, to that leaving our limitations and our narrowness, so to speak, to connect to Hashem in a much greater and more expansive way. So that's one basic explanation why Yetzias Mitzrayim is a basic tenet and a basic part of our day-to-day avodah, is the ability to leave our constraints, our limitation, and connect to the rachvos, to the expansiveness, the infinite nature of Hashem through Torah and mitzvahs. That's one pashat pshat. There's another pshat that I saw, a very beautiful pshat. It goes like this. Again, Mitzrayim is Mitzar, the narrowness. What's the narrowest part of a person? very personal. Where is the brain? Let's not get personal here. But in the physical body of a person, where is the narrow place? Is the neck. Exactly. It's called the Meitzar Hagorom. It's called the narrowness of the neck. The neck is the connector between the head and the heart. Right? The head is the seat of intellect, and the heart is the seat of emotion. Right? So our head is our intellectual capacity, is where we think and we understand and we verbalize and we talk and we listen. The head is all those primary, very refined parts of who we are. Our intellect is rooted is in our mind, and then it affects our emotions. But between there's the Mitzrayim. There's that narrowness. What does that narrowness represent? So in our head, we might learn and understand that something is good, that something is right, that something is good. But then there is that state where it might get lost before it affects our emotions, the way we feel about things. All too often, we understand it, but it doesn't talk to us. We don't feel it. We understand it's the right way for me to act, or it's the right way for me to daven, or whatever, but it doesn't translate to our emotions, to our feelings, to become fired up and passionate about it. That's that narrowness. It's interesting. Yes?
This goes back to your share of 2 weeks ago when you talked about the whole idea of a Amalek.
Very well said. Very well, that's connected to Amalek as well. But today we're talking about, as far as Mitzrayim, Paro. Take the word Paro, the four Hebrew letters of Paro, Pei, Resh, Ayin, Hei. If you mix the letters a little bit, you'll have Ha'oref. What's the Oref? Back of the neck. So Paro is the king of Mitzrayim, right? Mitzrayim is the narrowness of the neck. Paro is the king, the back of the neck. We're called a stiff-necked nation. I'm Kshei Oref. The word Oref is Paro. Because what is Paro trying to do to each and every one of us every day? To make that break. The break between the head and the heart. So that what we understand and what we're inspired by intellectually shouldn't actually express itself in passionate emotion and therefore lead what we actually do. So what's Yetzias Mitzrayim when we break out of Paro? Is when we allow. When we have when it becomes a clear way from the mind to the heart. Moach shalit al aliv, when what we learn does affect us properly, when we see to it that it doesn't just remain somewhere in the realm of understanding or something that's even in the abstract, but something that affects the way we feel and ultimately the way we act about it. And that's the Yetzias Mitzrayim that we're faced with every day of our life, to make sure that what we learn in our mind travels through the narrowness of the neck, doesn't get stuck by Paro in the back of the neck, but rather translates into actual feeling and ultimately Maisa B'Poel, as it says in the Mishnah Pirkei Avos, HaMaisa Hu HaIkar. The ultimate point is that what we understand should be translated into actuality and serving Hashem.
So that's the stand for
again? So the word Paro is the same letters as Ha'oref. Oref, which is the back of the neck. So if we're saying that Mitzrayim is the neck, the narrowness, Paro is the hard back of the neck. We're called a stiff-necked nation. He's the one who's there at the neck trying to halt that what we understand shouldn't affect us in the way that we do. And therefore, Yetzias Mitzrayim is breaking through that and making sure that what we learn does affect us and does change us in our actual avodah. So that's another idea.
You have to get down here to get to the
Bina. Exactly. Well, actually, the way it's more Kabbalistically is that the Chachma Bina and Das.
That's for you.
So, I'm gonna say that typically more Chachma Bina and Das are more here. Down here is the Chesed and the Gevura to actually carry it out. Chachma Bina and Das are all really part of understanding. Understanding it deeper and well. Different, but they're all really intellectual. And the idea is, if things just stay in the realm of intellectual, it doesn't go anywhere. It has to come into our midos. It has to come into the way we feel about it and then start acting upon it, because we act based on what we feel, not based on what we understand. If we're healthy, healthy spiritually speaking, then our understanding affects our emotions, which translates into our actions. And that's when there's Yetzias Mitzrayim. We've broken through that narrowness and allowed the flow to be the way it should be, a powerful flow from the beginning till the end. So that's another idea about Yetzias Mitzrayim. Okay, one more point. And this point is something that part of it I've spoken about here before, but to me it's a fascinating idea and I want to share it before Pesach. When it comes to Pesach, we have the primary mitzvah of the matzah and the primary iser, the prohibition of chametz. And on Pesach, we are anti-chametz. We don't want to have any connection with chametz. And there's some level of, I don't know what the word is, paranoia or something about chametz. Although we have many prohibitions in the Torah, there's something about chametz. It's forbidden to eat it. It's forbidden to derive any benefit from it. It's forbidden to have it in our property, right? And you don't have this about any other mitzvah that we have. You know, there's foods that are treif, and there's different types of treif. But when it comes to chametz, there's the iser of bal yirah, bal yimatza. You can't see it. You can't own it in any form. Total removal. To the extent that there's a mitzvah in the Torah that you got to destroy the chametz before Pesach. It's a pasuk in the Torah, right? Bayom HaRishon, Tashbisu Sa'or Mibatechem. We have to actually go out, and as we know, on the day before Pesach, we destroy our chametz. Now, how destroyed does it have to be in order to fulfill the mitzvah? What do you got to do to the chametz in order to fully have it destroyed? And there is a famous machlokas in Mishnayos, and that is Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Ein Biur Chametz Ela Bisreifa. The only way to get rid of chametz is burning it. You got to make a fire and burn it. That's the only way. Chachamim omrim. Chachamim say you don't got to be so extreme. Af mefarir vizore leruach. You don't have to burn it. You can. It's enough if you crumble up your bread and you throw it to the ear. That's machlokas. Do you have to actually burn the chametz, or could you just, you know, crumble it up into a million pieces and throw it to the ear? That's the machlokas. What's the halacha? So many people will say, you got to burn it. That's because we all do that. But it would be a mistake. The halacha is with the chachamim. Technically, halachically, I can crumble it up and throw it to the ear. The minhag is to burn it for many reasons, and maybe because it's much more exciting for the kids. But be that as it may, that's the machlokas. Now, the question is, what is at the root of that machlokas? Like, Rabbi Yehuda says, you got to burn it. And the chachamim say, it's enough mefarir brizora leruach. So, really, at the root of this machlokas is, how destroyed does it really have to be? What's the difference between when you burn something or when you crumble it up and throw it to the ear? When you crumble it up and throw it to the ear, you didn't essentially destroy it. You ruined its form. But it's a much more external destruction because all those crumbs are still there. Hypothetically, you can gather the crumbs from the ear and reconstruct your piece of bread. When you burn something, it turned into ashes. Right? You eradicated it. So essentially what Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim are arguing is, how destroyed does the chametz have to be? There's a mitzvah to destroy it, but how much? How deeply do you have to destroy it? So I mentioned in the past that there was one of the great Torah geniuses of the previous generation was named the Gaon of the Rag. He's known by his name, the Ragged Shover Gaon, Rabbi Yosef Rosen. He's the Rav in the city of Dvinsk. Tremendous Torah genius. One of the things that he would do is find patterns in Torah and see like a machlokas in one area in Shas and connected with machlokas that seemingly has nothing to do with it whatsoever, and he'd be able to show how essentially they're talking about the same thing. And he was a genius at this. So he points to a very interesting other machlokas, seemingly about a totally unrelated topic. And that is, it says in the Pasuk in Bichukosai, that when Mashiach will come, v'hishbati chaya ra'a min ha'aretz. Hashem says, I will destroy all bad animals. No more. So there's an interesting machlokas in the Medrash. What exactly is going to happen with the bad animals? Reb Yehuda Omer, mashbisan min ha'olam. They won't be anymore. No more lions. When Mashiach comes,
the famous thing though, the asp, and it turns into a friend and the little girl.
Yeah. Okay, that's definitely dealt with in that medrash. But Rabbi Yehuda says, no more lions, tigers, bears. I don't know what they'll do with the zoos. Mashbisan min ha'olam. Rabbi Shimon Omer, mashbisan shelo yaziku. Hashem won't destroy the wild animals. He'll make that they won't be wild anymore. They won't be harmful.
Yeah, like
so,
the little girl.
Right, exactly. You'll have a pet lion, pet tiger, you know, go play with the bears. Yeah. Right? Says the Ragged Shover Gaon, think about it. It's the same people, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Shimon, right? And he says, what are they really arguing about? The Hebrew meaning of a word. The word by chametz is tashbisu, to destroy the chametz. Oh. The word there is vihishbati. It's the same Hebrew word. Says the Ragged Shover, the word means destruction. The question is, how deep does destruction have to be? So Rabbi Yehuda, who said the chametz, you got to get rid of it. It's got to be burnt. Says Hashem will get rid of the wild animals. It's not enough to change the form. You got to get rid of its essence. Because Rabbi Yehuda follows his pattern of thinking. When the Torah says, I'm going to destroy, it's complete. It's total. It's removed. It can't exist. It's got to be burnt, got to be removed. Rabbi Shimon follows the Chachamim. And they say, destruction, as long as you change the form, it's good enough. If you crumble up your bread and throw it to the ear, that's good enough. If Hashem changes the form of the wild animals, that they're not wild anymore, that's adequate. That's what Rabbi Shimon says. And that was the Vart of the Raga Shavar Gaon. Essentially, what are they arguing about? When Hashem says to destroy something, that means it's bad. How deep is the bad in it? In other words, how essentially bad is it? Based on how essentially bad it is, that's how much it has to be destroyed. Right? If the essence of it is bad, the essence has to be destroyed. If only more external part of it is bad, then only that external form has to be destroyed. The essence doesn't have to be destroyed. Right? Now let's find a fascinating machlokas in the Haggadah and how that connects as well. And although the first part I mentioned once in the past.
This in Chassidic terms of the Chaim and the Tzura?
You could. Yeah, that works. That works. But let's look at the Haggadah. One of the passages of the Haggadah that's got to be strange to a lot of people, and it's already at a point in the Haggadah when a lot of people are already putting the gas to the pedal, you know, because we got to get to the matzah already. But there's this whole debate, how many makos was every makah made up of? Ever noticed it? First it says, well, there was 10 makos in Mitzrayim. And we all learned that in Cheder, we know that. Then it says, no, really every makah was made up of 4. So there's 40. And then times 5, so it's 200. Then there's another sheet that says, no, each makah is made out of 5. So it's 50. And then times 5 by the Am, so it's 250. Right? This, at some point, Seder night, everyone's reading numbers. Everyone's pulling out their calculators and their minds. What's going on over here, right? So in the Haggadah, there's a number of shitas. And the basic question is, what is... So you have Rabbi Eliezer says, Kol mako mako hoya shal arba makos. Every mako is made up of 4. Rabbi Akiva omer, Kol mako mako hoya shal chomesh makos. Every mako is 5. What are they arguing about? And why is it important? Does it matter if there was 10 or 40 or 50 or 100? What's the argument about? I'll say parenthetically, Avart of the Vilna Gaon and the Gra, he said that the reason why we want to say that there's so many makas in Mitzrayim is because there's a pasuk that says, Kol hamaka shersamti b'Mitzrayim li'osim alecha. Hashem says, whatever makas there were in Mitzrayim, I'm not going to give you. So the Chachamim wanted to make it more and more sicknesses, because each one that is there is one off our chart. That's the word from Vilna Gaon. That's the word from Vilna Gaon. But the shaila is, what's the story? Is every makah made up of 4? Is every makah made up of 5? What are they really arguing about? So there is a sefer called the Kolbo. The Kolbo is from the Rishonim. It's a sefer that's got to be 900 years old. It's not clear who the author of the Kolbo is. It's one of the famous questions. But it's a sefer from the Rishonim. And he says something very fascinating. He says, everything in this world is made up of 4 elements. And this Rambam writes about this, and there's other sources. Everything, there's Eish, Ruach, Mayim, and Ofer, right? Fire, energy, water, air, earth. He says, everything in the world is made up of 4 elements. So when Rabbi Eliezer said every makkah was made up of 4 makkahs, what he was saying is that every makkah, it smote every article, every element of every part of being. That's what Rabbi Eliezer meant. That's what the Kolbo says. That when he said 4, it didn't just get the basic, the way you see it, it really permeated. Every makkah permeated all 4 elements of everything. Says the Kolbo, comes Rabbi Akiva, and he says, no, each makkah is made up of 5, not just 4. What's number 5? He says, everything is made up of 4 elements, and then there is the quintessence of everything, which is the 5th, which brings all 4 together. Right? Anyone here knows the word quintessence, quintessential? What is the word quint?
Five.
Quint is 5, Latin for 5. Quintessential, the real meaning,
Quintet is a 5.
Right, quint is 5. The real source of the word quintessence, and here's I'm not an etymology teacher of words, but the real source of the word quintessence is because everything has 4 elements, and quint is the very essence that brings all 4 together. The very essence. Says the Kolbo, when Rabbi Akiva says in our Haggadah, every makkah is made up of 5, not just of 4, he was saying that the makkah didn't just permeate the 4 elements of everything in Mitzrayim, it actually permeated the very quintessence. Number 5 was also smitten by the makkah.
Is there another word for this, whatever this quintessence?
Well, in Hebrew, there's koach hamarkiv, Brings it all together.
Markiv?
Yeah, Harkova is bringing something together. So there's a Dal of Yesodos and there's a Koach HaMarkiv. Yeah. Or in Ramban language, it's the Koach Hiyuli. The Ramban talks about the Hiyuli, which is the very essence of creation. Says, so what do we see? That what were Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Eliezer really arguing about in the Agoda? How deeply did Hashem destroy Mitzrayim? Did he just destroy the four elements of everything or the very essence of everything? Let's think. This argument is totally connected with the earlier argument about our destruction of chametz. Oh. How deeply do we have to destroy the chametz, right? Or how deeply will Hashem destroy the wild animals when Mashiach will come? It all becomes one interesting question, which is whenever there's destruction, when Hashem destroys something, or when Hashem tells us that we should destroy something, right? Hashem destroys the Mitzrayim. Hashem tells us to destroy the chametz. What is he telling us? That there's badness here, there's impurity, there's unholiness that has to be destroyed. But how deep is the impurity? How deep is the unholiness? How deep
is really bad? So you think you go to the essence?
Right. So how deep does the destruction have to be? And here we see that there's two lines of thinking. There's the line of Rabbi Yehuda, and we saw it in chametz. We saw it in the wild animals. Rabbi Yehuda says you got to destroy it totally. It's got to be gone. You got to burn it. The wild animals have to be removed from the world. And there's Rabbi Akiva in the Haggadah who says, Hashem destroyed Mitzrayim to the very essence. Not just four, number five, the quintessence. Amazingly, Rabbi Akiva in the Gemara agrees with Rabbi Yehuda that chametz has to be burnt. Following the line of thinking?
So why is that amazing?
Because Rabbi Akiva, it fits beautifully. Yeah. That Rabbi Akiva, when he talks in Haggadah about the Makkas, that he says five, that Hashem destroyed the essence of Mitzrayim. He says, and I'm on Rabbi Akiva's team, that you got to destroy the essence of the chametz. But Rabbi Eliezer in the Haggadah, he says, no, you don't get it. Hashem didn't destroy the essence of Mitzrayim, he just destroyed the elements. In other words, that's something more external. He'll follow the Ashita of the Chachamim, who say you don't have to burn the chametz, you can crumble and throw it to the air. Essentially, what's at the essence of this question? Whenever we see evil or badness, unholiness, impurity, how deep is it? Is it when something is unholy, when something is bad, when something is evil, do we look at it and say that the essence of it is bad and has to be destroyed? Or is it that its external form is bad? But if you get rid of the external form, the essence can be turned to Kedusha. And that is essentially this question. So this halachic question is really a great Torah philosophy question, a philosophical question, which is when you have bad, and there's bad things in this world, there's things that have to be pushed away, there's things that have to be destroyed even. But how do we look at bad? Is bad something that we're saying that Hashem created certain things that are so essentially bad that they just have to be destroyed and finished? Or do we say that whenever there's something bad, it's more of an external aspect of badness. But if you're able to get rid of that externality, you can always find the goodness and the holiness that's dormant somewhere within. And that is the halacha. The halacha is not that you have to burn the chametz. Again, we do, because that's the minhag.
Yeah, but you got a Moloch, and you got Hitler, and you got all these bad shlishkos, tomatoes.
But ultimately, according, especially Kabbalistically, and according to Kabbalah and Hasidus, everything comes from Hashem. Everything has a divine spark in it. And there's a lot of badness and negativity that might be covered over, and it might be so much that we'll never find it. But we believe everything ultimately, essentially, has a source in Kedusha. And that's why unholiness in Kabbalah is always called klipa. What does klipa mean? Shell. It's a shell. It's a cover-up. It's something covering over. And even Amalek, when you mention Amalek, which is the worst of the worst and has to be destroyed, nevertheless, the Gemara tells us, and I just had that discussion with you and some others 2 weeks ago, that Mibnei Banav Shel Haman Lamdu Torah Bivnei Brak, which means that Haman, which is Amalek, yet somewhere in him, there were sparks of Kedusha that had to come out, and ultimately were big Talmidei Chachamim that came from him.
Really?
And that's because ultimately, everything in this world is from the Ribbono Shel Olam. There is no other source. And even things that are so bad that they have to be totally crushed, ultimately we have to crush its external facade, the negative form
of it. That's why the halacha is like that.
And that's why the halacha is like the chachamim. That actually you could crumble up the thing. And that's why the halacha with the wild animals is that they will be, but they won't be bad anymore. Right. Not totally destroyed.
So I would see the picture of the little girl with her hand over the...
I can't remember which number.
Vigar Zaev, Kemes, but not Miriam Gedi Yerbatz. It's a Yishayo. And therefore, this is the message of this concept. That even though there are two shitas in the Sinai, and there are two shitas in Torah, we're talking about tremendous Talmid Chachamim, as we're seeing, it comes up in the destruction of Chametz, it comes up in the destruction of the wild animals, it comes up in how many Makkas that Hashem destroyed Mitzrayim with, was it four, was it five? But essentially, it's one philosophical question, and that is, when we do see bad in this world, and bad that has to be destroyed, nevertheless, we have to remember that what is bad and what has to be destroyed is always going to be the externality of something in order to be able to find the primius, the depth of it and the essence of it, which ultimately has that spark of Kedusha from Hashem, which created it and maintains it and will ultimately be transformed and brought back into the realm of Kedusha as well.